Welcome to the New Kind of Man podcast. This is episode 15. And in this episode, I am talking with Tim Ferrara, who's a blogger and an author. He authored a book called Everyday Discernment. And what we're going to see in this episode is how discernment can form a battle plan for your life. And it is going to be a very practical conversation that you get to take notes in if you choose, and also just to listen and absorb and apply some of these things. And at the back end of this conversation, I asked him a question that he wasn't ready for, and I asked him, because he's a man of discernment, he's talking about discernment, I asked him, I said, do you think Jesus would have social media? So if you want to know the answer to that question and many more questions, stay tuned and listen in. Welcome to the New Kind of Man podcast, where we are growing stronger and more capable men. We believe that every man can be a good man, and we are here to help men on their journey to become new men. These men will become better at leading themselves and better at leading in their homes and workplaces. Paul the Apostle gave the command to put on the new man. On this podcast, I interview people who become new men relationally, physically, spiritually, or intellectually. This happens through their stories of stretching, grit, and determination. We want the good, the bad, and the ugly, so we all can become better men. So let's get after it. Welcome to the New Kind of Man podcast. And today we have Tim Ferrara from The Discerning Dad, and the blog is just widely popular, and a lot of people subscribe to that blog. And Tim is going to share some things about his book, actually, a book that is recently dropped called Everyday Discernment. But before I let the cat out of the bag, I would just like to welcome you to the show, Tim.
Thanks, Chad. It's great to be on. I appreciate the invite. And, you know, we've connected quite a bit online in different ways. You wrote a guest blog for me last year. And so yep. I appreciate that. And so it's great to be on and just kind of share the heart for our ministries.
Yeah, I really appreciate you letting me write that too. Writing is something that I like to do. It's a discipline that I like to drill down in. And when I get deadlines, like for writing on your blog, that helps me to reinforce that discipline so I can get in the habit of writing. So I did say that you started Discerning Dad, but give us some of the history about Discerning Dad, what it is, and why you started it.
Yeah, I started it at the end of 2018, and I really came around with what I was feeling at the time to write. And, you know, I hadn't written anything significant since I had graduated my master's degree, so many years down the road. And so I felt this burning passion to kind of write again, and God was giving me these insights for things that would make a good blog topic. And so it was almost like I call it almost like a download from heaven one day at a Sunday message about the gifts of the Spirit. And so, you know, discernment was one of the ones that I kind of verified was one of my top ones based on a spiritual gifts test online. Mm-hmm. And so I went home and I had all these ideas. I just journaled like crazy. I journaled what a name for a blog would be, what a logo would look like, kind of short-term, long-term stretch goals. And out of that kind of birthed, you know, what Discerning Dad is today. And, it became something where I can encourage people daily online through either a quick quote or Bible verse and a weekly blog. And kind of the same thing, about 4 months later after I started it, I had the same kind of passion to write a book. And I mean, if you told me 2 years ago I would have written a book, I would have called you crazy, because that's not something that I wanted to do. The idea of it was very, you know, scary. And so I really credit God for just the idea and kind of the outline and the way it flowed over a matter of just months to write a book was amazing. And I look back and I give thanks to God, because the idea of writing a book now is scary again. So I think unless you have a vision for something and God gives you a passion, it's really hard to kind of artificially make something happen. Yeah. And so the book kind of just came out of that. And so I'm blessed to have it now. I really hope it does bless others as well and help them learn how to grow in discernment in different areas of their life.
Cool. Yeah, I had a similar thing happen to me actually before I started A New Kind of Man, and before I launched the Instagram page and Facebook page and the private group on Facebook, all of that. Before I started any of this, I was woken up in the middle of the night, and it was just, I don't know, I guess the Lord spoke to me right in that moment. And it was just said, pick your phone up. I was like, okay. I picked up my phone and I literally got basically an introduction and 10 chapter headings and stories to go with 10 chapters of a book.
Wow.
And it was just all in a moment. I'm thinking, what in the world? And I didn't expect any of that. I mean, I'm an avid reader, but I didn't expect any of that. And I seem to have these kind of divine moments where I just wake up in the middle of the night and it's, you know, it's one of those obedience things. It's like, here's something special for you.
Yeah.
You know, you were doing your thing and now I'm just going to intercede your life and I'm just going to drop this and it's your responsibility to do something with it. Now I have, and I haven't written a book, but I've been sitting on it, and I believe that all of this is actually part of the process to me, so I can be better informed, more well-rounded, and gain more knowledge. So then when the book comes out, that it's more complete. So I love how that stuff happens. Well, at the beginning of the show, we always do the Fast Five, and these are usually very deep questions. We're going to start with a deep one right now. And
let's do it.
I apologize for jumping right into the weeds, but you know, sometimes you just have to. First question is, does pineapple belong on pizza?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I'm telling you, I'm going to have to consult the Bible for that. I think the book of Hesitations has something to say about that. No, I think unless you're a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, I don't think it belongs on pizza. I think, to be honest with you.
Wow. Reference Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. I like that. That's great.
I grew up with them, man. I tell you, I put whipped cream. I put all kinds of stuff on my pizzas when I was young, thinking I was so cool, like the turtles. And it didn't take very long for me to realize, no, let's just stick with pepperoni and cheese.
Oh, that's amazing. So who is someone that you admire, that you currently admire?
There's a lot of people, you know, big names in ministry that I like listening to. I think I would just go to Billy Graham as someone that I admire for just the amount of work that he did to spread the gospel is almost unmatched in this day and age. And even when you go back and listen to some of his messages from 30, 40 years ago, I mean, they're just as relevant then as they were today, or, you know. And so he's someone that, and even Franklin Graham now and what he's doing and stuff, that whole family is just a bright light in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy Graham, he was a phenomenal man. And one of the things I really admire about Billy Graham is the fact that he had impeccable integrity and character off stage.
Yes.
And everywhere he went, he was Billy Graham. He wasn't just the personality. He wasn't, well, on stage I'm going to be one thing, and then at home I'm going to be something else. I mean, he was true to his roots and true to, again, his integrity and character. And I think that goes a long ways. And the fact that, you know, his name is still relevant and people still hear that name and think fondly, people who are either in the faith or out of the faith, I think goes a long way into what we're saying as well. So who would be your favorite author?
I think my current favorite author is Sean Bowles. He writes books on the gift of the prophetic and how to act in the gift of the prophetic. And I learned a lot about that. I'm still learning a lot about that. It's something that, you know, is not talked about a lot. And so I think almost like, you know, I'm trying to bring awareness around discernment and what that is. I think he's way ahead of me on the prophetic, but he has a really good book, Modern Prophets, and also Translating God. And those are really good books on how the Holy Spirit can give us discernment and help us give prophetic words and stuff for other people.
Cool. So what was your favorite part of the writing process?
I think when I finished it, honestly.
I wondered if you were going to say that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really cool to see your vision executed. I think when I got the first writer's copy in the mail, it was an amazing moment to actually hold it.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget that feeling. And, you know, like anything, you know, doing it, there was some long nights. There was times when I would get on the computer and I only had 30 minutes. And by the time I researched something or started to put words down, you know, the 30 minutes was up. and I didn't get anything accomplished. And so I had some frustrating parts in the process, but overall, just seeing the vision come out to in the paper form is really cool. And, you know, there's always more that you could have added or longer that you could have taken on a project. And at some point you just have to say, all right, this is what it is. I can't add any more to it right now. And God bless it, you know?
Yeah. Super cool. So I ask this question to most men who come on the pod, and it's a question that doesn't necessarily just have to do with being a dad, although this does inform how well you're going to be a father. But in your understanding, Tim, what does it take to be a man?
I think that it's very important to always keep learning. You know, we're never at a point where we know everything there is to a parent or to be a Christian or as much knowledge as we can even consume. It's just a small fraction of what's out there. I mean, you can read a book a day and you're still 1% of all the books that, you know, you can consume. And so I think for a dad, you have to constantly learn. You have to be humble. You have to learn from your mistakes and you have to adapt. No child is exactly the same. And there's general principles that can be applied to every, you know, every child, I think, but you have to know your children and you have to say, okay, this doesn't work anymore. We need to try something else. We've done that with my son as far as discipline goes or, schooling. And you have to make the right decisions and have discernment about what those decisions are and the best thing for your family. I can't say that the decisions I made as a dad can be applied to every person because they can't. They're specific to me and my family and God's calling on my life. And so yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So as far as with the discipline, you said with your son that it had to change. What did you start with? And then what did you change to as far as your disciplinary technique?
Yeah, it's changed over the years. He's very strong-willed. And so, you know, God's going to use that in great ways. We keep praying that over him. But for now, you know, as he's in our home and facing authority, you know, spanking doesn't work. You know, we tried that maybe initially. It might work for some. You know, I didn't like to get spanked as a kid. I wanted to do the best I could to kind of avoid that. And so for him, we had to look at ways where we can engage him with, you know, not just a timeout, but explaining the reasons why. And now we're into, you know, just go to your room. If there's a defiant act, just go to your room. We'll talk about it later. Because when he's in that moment of intense emotion, you can't reason with him.
Right.
And so you have to kind of remove him from the situation, bring him back down, and then explain, okay, these are the things you did to defy the authority in this house, and these are the consequences for your actions. And we try to also tie it into real world examples. So, you know, if you defied authority and you were an adult and you talk that way to a police officer, you know, there would be consequences for those actions. And so I think we've had to adapt, you know, my wife and I over time, just because understanding the heart of our child. And my daughter's different. Like, she goes to her room and she's super repentant, like cries, like, you know, and it gets more to her. We don't have to explain it as much. She knows that she did wrong. And so with my son, it's a little bit more, I think, you know, tailoring the message to how this will impact you if you don't change, type of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting, even in not knowing your kids, so I'm not saying this specifically of your kids, but it seems like, you know, with some kids, they're very inclined to just, you know, lead out with pride. And then if you meet them with some aggression, and I'm saying aggression meaning not in a way that you're abusing them, but you're disciplining them, and there's clearly a difference. Yeah. But if you're doing that and you just try and spank a child, if pride is the thing at play, it seems to just harden their pride. I mean, that's what I've seen in my parenting. I have a 23-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter. Of course, I'm well beyond all of those years, but I vividly remember them. And yet on some of the other kids where it seems like you're not met with pride, but it's, you have to be careful of shame, like the ones who feel bad instantaneously. It's like they need that extra, what I've seen is they need that extra reassurance because they could feel just shame for doing it. Right. And so you don't want to wipe away their identity and think, man, now I just lost everything. So Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think that, that we all could use, you know, tips on discipline, and I'm a firm believer that it's not one size fits all.
Right. And like you said, if you play the escalation game, your kid's going to win and you're going to lose, the battle, because, you know, they yell and you yell louder and they yell louder and it just, no one wins in that scenario. And I've been guilty of it. And I've had to, I think, you know, as a father too, there's nothing wrong in asking for repentance from your children. If you acted in a way that, you know, you didn't honor them, granted, you have to be the disciplinarian and all that kind of stuff. But if there's a moment that maybe you yelled or maybe you did something that, you know, you regret, like, just be open about it. And I think I've had to learn that too, that, hey, you know, I'm sorry. I, you know, let's work harder next time to not do whatever it was, you know?
Yeah. And also, kind of closing up that idea, I loved how you pointed out earlier when you were talking and you explained to them why.
Exactly.
You know, because, you know, I think that maybe there's a lot of guys who are out there, and their parenting model that was pushed upon them when they were growing up was because I said so.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's like, because I said so, I'm like, okay, well, what does that really matter? But if you get to the why, and that's the character shaping part of it. So, you know, that's, hey, if you continue to do this, like the example you use with police officers, if you continue to do this, in you buck authority, this is what it looks like in the real world.
Right.
So, excellent. So who's had the biggest impact on you as a man?
It's definitely my dad. He's been a pastor, pretty much my whole life. You know, I grew up in the church, and, he really modeled for me faithfulness, in two ways: faithfulness to God through thick and thin, through, you know, health issues, through financial issues. His faith in God never wavered. I mean, he had bad days, of course, but there was never a question that, oh, God doesn't exist. You know, that never came up in our household. And so his faithfulness to God and his faithfulness to my mom were the two things that really stuck with me, that he modeled it. You know, it's different between, like you said, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
You know, he said it and he backed it up with how he lived his life. And that speaks volumes a lot more than simple words do. And so I've tried to do the same for my children.
Yeah, right on. And that consistency versus hypocrisy.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds like that's been the North Star with your dad, and the way that he was faithful to the Lord and then faithful to his, you know, calling, and then faithful to your mom. So that's amazing. You know, it's always great when somebody comes on the podcast and their answer is their dad, because all too often it's not their dad. It's, you know, my dad wasn't around, or, you know, they pinged around life and then they come to some crisis and realized, whoa, you know, that their life had this incredible void, and that being their dad. But
yeah,
certainly not your story. Well,
yeah, I'm blessed.
Yeah. Let's get into Everyday Discernment, the book you just wrote that is available now. I thank you for forwarding me the digital copy. Give me a chance to look it over. I thought it was really good. I thought what we would do is just drill down on a couple things that are in the book.
Yeah.
And one of the things that drew me in, was you said that the book was designed as a battle plan for life. What does that mean to you?
I wanted to make a book that was very practical. So not something that you just read for knowledge or entertainment, something that you can apply and has application for everyday life. I mean, it's called Everyday Discernment, because we need discernment every day. We need to be able to apply discernment to our life. We need to be able to look at the decisions we make in light of Scripture, in light of God's calling on our life, and in light of, the direction we're heading. Where is God calling us to be, you know, in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years? And are we doing the steps we need to get there? And so as far as a battle plan, you know, I kind of designed the book to explain what discernment is, how we acquire it. And then every chapter after that talks about very specific areas of our life. So our finances, our parenting, you know, how we can have discernment with the type of entertainment media we watch, how can we can have discernment on social media, our career choices, our relationships, you know, as a husband. And so at the end of every chapter two, there's, you know, reflection and discussion questions, which allow you to kind of stop and say, okay, how do I apply what I just learned to my specific situation? What is God telling me in this chapter? And how can I, you know, write down the answers and kind of reflect on them? And it also does a really good job, I think, in small group settings where you can kind of go back and forth with other people. We're doing that right now in a group of about 10 people that are meeting in my home to kind of go over the book. And so, yeah, I wanted it to be something, you know, the book is not designed to be consumed in one sitting. It's something to be, you know, kind of taken chapter by chapter and kind of ask God, you know, what it means for you.
Yeah. And you cite in your book that, that we make approximately 35,000 decisions daily.
I said, that's crazy, right?
It is. I looked at that. Actually, I thought about that earlier today. I was sitting at lunch and just having a conversation. I don't know what it was and what spurred it, but I was like, yeah, Tim said 35,000 decisions every day. And man, that's a really, you know, that is a huge number. And of course, some of those decisions are where we're going to eat, you know, and who cares, go eat.
Right.
But then there's others that have, you know, long lasting, implications. So some are important and some are vital. So how can a man use discernment to make better decisions? I mean, I think every guy out there needs this. And if you're into this podcast this far and you're not a Christian, what Tim is going to be telling you is most likely some scriptures. So before you push back against that and say, well, I just don't know if I agree with what the Bible says, listen to the path and the logic in what he's saying. And I bet that there'd be something in there that sparks your interest to say, there's something to this message that's compelling and that I need to lean into it. So my hope is that you're leaning in right now. And Tim, I'll give you a chance to answer the question that I asked you earlier. How can a man use discernment to make better decisions?
Sure. Well, I want to read Hebrews 5:14. It says, but solid food is for the mature who, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil. And so the Bible talks a lot about solid food and how we need to grow in maturity as Christians. And a lot of that comes down to where we get our knowledge. I think in general, people make decisions that are in line with what they think is best for themselves. I mean, people don't go out purposely trying to sabotage their life, you know, for the most part.
Right.
And so the decisions people make comes down to what training have I received? What knowledge do I have? How was it modeled for me? It's a whole kind of nature versus nurture thing. You know, what was my experience like? So how I saw parenting happen is how I probably will be as a parent.
Right.
You know, how I saw my dad's work ethic will probably be close to my work ethic. And
right.
So we look at a lot of our physical examples. We look at a lot of our education and we look at a lot of our, you know, religious beliefs in areas that kind of influence the decisions we make. And so I talk a lot about the fact that there's three main sources for Christian discernment. And one of those is the Bible.
Right.
The second one is the Holy Spirit. And the third one is godly relationships that are put in our life. So, you know, a spouse, a pastor, a mentor, other brothers or sisters in the Lord that can speak to you in a moment and give you wisdom. The Bible being the big one. I mean, that is the Word of God. It's our kind of our roadmap for life. If you look at decisions that you would make on a freeway, for example, you know, go right or left, go this way, east, north, west, south. I mean, all those decisions you use a physical map for. And if you're not familiar with the area, you're going to rely on that map more than you would if you drive the same route every single day.
Right.
And so the Bible is our map for life, where the Bible helps us navigate the turns and the questions and go this way or that way. And the more familiar we are with the Bible, the less we have to reference it, because the Bible becomes a part of us. We, you know, the more we read it and consume the Bible, it becomes, you know, almost second nature to us, where we can cite a verse. We may not know the exact scripture, but we know the meanings of the verses and we're able to apply it to our life. And so I think that's the main source of discernment that men can use. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, the joke about men not wanting to ask for directions, you know.
Right.
Why, well, why is that? Why would a man not want to ask for directions? You know, the big reason is pride.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you don't want to look that you are in need of help. You don't want to have to ask for help. You want to say, I have it all together. I can figure this out. Even if we take multiple wrong turns, I can figure it out. And so I think we all need to overcome that little bit of pride in us where we say, I don't need help. I'll do the best I can with the knowledge I have, and whatever happens, happens. And so when we start seeking the Bible and we start seeking, you know, maybe a mentor, or, you know, there's a stigma even around counseling. And I think something like counseling is something that is available. You know, you need to talk to somebody. I personally have had to do that, you know, have had to talk to a mentor. And overcoming pride and knowing what you need in that moment, say, I need help with this decision. I'm overwhelmed. I have anxiety or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I need a resource to help me get out of this.
Yeah.
As opposed to being stuck in it for another year or more.
Yeah. You had said the three primary means of gaining discernment is the Bible, the Holy Spirit, and godly relationships. Yes. And I'm a huge proponent for godly relationships, for people who would speak truth into my life, and for me to have the opportunity to speak truth into their life. And so we can go out and we can have some manly fun, but yet it's not just going to be bravado and blowing off steam. We'll also be able to speak truth to one another. And if we see one another starting to slip, our character's not right, somebody says something, you know, says something about, hey, you need to look at them. Their marriage doesn't seem to be right. Or, you know, Chad's kids, a little shady right now. I don't know what's going on. I saw this thing on Facebook, and I think, you know, I want people speaking into my life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I need it more than other people. I mean, I think so. I need people to do that. And for me, I naturally just, and I think men naturally want to give advice and counseling. I think it's just how we're wired anyway. And so I think that there's both a longing, but then a longing for us to do it, but then also there's a need for us to receive it, to give that 360. So we have people all the way around us who will tell us the truth about ourselves, and specifically when you're about to make a decision.
Yeah. And I talked about our spouses too, but our spouses know us better than anyone else. And I think we have to make sure that we utilize them to be able to speak in our life when they see us down. You know, I internalize a lot of stuff myself. And so there'll be times where I may not talk about something. And so my wife has to be, okay, tell me three things right now you're stressed about. I'm like, all right, fine. I'll tell you three things, you know, and just by doing that alone, you know, it releases something in me where I don't have to, okay, it's not all about me. I don't have to do this by myself. She's here for me. She's a helpmate the way it's designed to be. And so that might look differently for everybody, but, you know, building that relationship with our spouse, you know, through devotionals, through prayer together, I think will also strengthen that dynamic.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's great too, what you pointed out about your wife being the one who's kind of helping draw things out of you. And what I found is we have to give our wives permission to do that. So we have to humble ourselves to go to them, because we can be complicated. Yeah. We can be so compartmentalized. And especially our wives, they do, like, I agree with you. My wife knows me better than anyone else on planet Earth. Yeah. We've been married for 26 years. We've been, you know, in a relationship for 28. There's no one who knows me as well as she does, but I have to give her permission, humble myself and give her permission to say, hey, if you see me, you know, wondering or wavering, or you see me struggling with something, I may not even know it. So giving her permission ahead of time to, hey, please speak into this, because it could be a blind spot. Again, that's the 360 aspect of it, you know, because we all have blind spots.
Absolutely.
So you also cite in your book a quote from Spurgeon, and I love Spurgeon. And the quote says, discernment is not knowing the difference between right and wrong. It is knowing the difference between right and almost right. Could you speak into that?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to the choices we make. You know, if you come at me and you tell me that, you know, you need to denounce God, you need to, you know, do all these, you know, supernatural things, you know, occult or that kind of stuff, I'm going to say, no, that's obviously not right. You know,
right.
But the discernment that's harder is, you know, what job is God calling me to? You know, how should I properly use my finances? How do I need to parent today to show love to my children? Those things that are, you know, there might be multiple answers, but a lot of times there's one right answer that God has for you.
Right.
And so discernment helps us navigate that, where we go to God and we say, okay, this is my situation, make it clear. And a lot of times the way it's made clear to us is through a peace. You know, if you have peace about something, a lot of times that's God's way of showing you, okay, this is the direction you need to go. And it doesn't mean that every decision we make is going to be without its bumps and bruises, but it also means that if we bring it to God and ask him ahead of time, instead of vice versa, we make our decision and then later on we say, well, God, where were you? This decision failed. And he's like, well, you never came to me with it to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
And Proverbs 16:1 says, we may make our plans, but God has the last word. And so there's a lot of that where go to God ahead of time and ask him for where he wants you to go.
Yeah. And I like I think it's Proverbs 16:9. It says that basically a man plans his course, but the Lord determines our steps is basically that's a paraphrase of it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, we make our decision, hey, we're going to do this. And we think we're going to go from A to B, but in the sovereign plan of God, we're going to go A to B, but what we don't know is that we're going to go, you know, it's not a straight shot. There's some mountains and valleys in there because all of that is to help equip us.
Exactly.
And to refine some character and to shape us into being the men that we can be.
Yes.
So, you know, I see a growing trend, and I have for years, and this really breaks my heart. This is one of the reasons why I started working with men. My eyes became open to this 18 years ago when I started working with men. And so I see men becoming indifferent on growing spiritually or leading their family spiritually. What would you say to that guy? Now, I realize we have a lot of high caliber guys who are going to be listening to this podcast. We really do. But if there's a guy who's wavering or struggling, what would you say to that guy to give him a bump in the right direction?
Yeah, I think it's a problem for everyone to some degree is apathy. You know,
right.
we just go through life. We kind of let life happen to us. And it's funny because if you don't enjoy, you know, the moments you're given, the time you're given, especially with your family, you know, it's gone before you know it. I mean, my kids are still small, but I know that to be true. We always look to the next thing. We look to the next vacation, the next year, the next job, the next. And we don't always enjoy the moment. We don't always ask God for wisdom in the moment. We just kind of get through the day. Before you know it, a day's gone, a week's gone, a month's gone. And, you know, Christmas is around the corner again. I mean, and so I think a lot of that comes down with apathy in life, going through the motions, and it might be a tough season that you're in. It might be, you know, you're working nonstop. You come home, there's no rest. You know, there's a lot asked of you. You're not getting enough sleep. I mean, all these are factors that kind of lead to an apathetic life. And so I think you really have to look at your time. And that's a chapter in my book is discernment with your time. How are you best utilizing your time to accomplish your priorities?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your priorities should always be God first, then your wife and family, and then your job. And if your job is your number one priority, you know, you have to just analyze it in your life. And like I said, maybe it's a season you're in, maybe it'll change soon, but you can't always rely on it just changing down the road if there's not specific steps to get there. You know, C.S. Lewis talked about in the Screwtape Letters where, I don't know if you know that book where, you know, Satan's talking to his minions about how to get Christians, you know, basically just to not care anymore. And that's their tool. So the more they can get guys to just kind of show up to church, check it off a box and compartmentalize their life where, okay, I'm a Christian on Sunday. I'm a different person at work. And then I'm a different person at home. And, you know, we can't be that way. We have to be a Christian 100% of our time, you know, it's no different than, John Maxwell talks about ethics. You know, there's no such thing as business ethics. There's only ethics. You can't have ethics in business and then not ethics somewhere else. And so it's the same thing as being a Christian. You can't just be a business Christian or a church Christian. You have to be a Christian. And, I don't know. I think there's no, like I said before, there's no shame in asking for support. If you're in that point where you're just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know my purpose in life. I'm just going through the motions. I've been there. Ask God what he has for you and then walk in obedience. A lot of where I've come today is because of walking through open doors that God's given me. And that's a whole message in itself. You know, walking through open doors God gives you is scary. A lot of times you don't know what's on the other side of that open door. It might look scary. It might look out of your comfort zone. But just by saying yes to God and saying yes to that open door can lead you to an increased favor in your life, increased blessing from God. And, you know, like my position in like church and where I'm at now with the book, like all these are just small steps I've done. I didn't know in advance I'd be, you know, in ministry, writing a book. All those were very small steps that I won't go into just by saying yes to maybe I'm going to give an offering message at church. Or maybe I'm going to lead a small group.
Right.
Or maybe I'm going to, you know,
it's just serve. The next thing.
Yeah. It's just always the next thing.
It's saying yes to the next thing. And to me, that's the amazing part about the Christian faith. It's when you say to the next thing, you have no idea where it's going to go. I think that most Christians who are unfulfilled in their life is because they're not living by faith. You know, and I'm not saying that you throw out logic and you throw out and now you just live by faith and now I'm not going to work and I'm just going to throw my hands up and, you know, I'm not talking about foolishness, but to live by faith and to be able to hear and listen when God says to do something. And the simple, quick obedience is the best obedience. It always is.
Yeah.
And you never know where that's going to take you. And again, if you're unfulfilled in your Christian life, I would say that you need to surrender that to God and say, God, I'm sorry, I'm not doing it. Like, trust me, if you think the Christian life is boring, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You're not always going to be an author. You're not always going to be a pastor. You're not always going to be, you know, having some role, an official title in the church. But let me tell you, if you say yes to God, he's going to put you in places that you could not even imagine. And meeting people that you would have never met simply by saying yes when you're supposed to. So how do you kind of turn the page a little bit? How do you pass this discernment on to your kids?
Yeah, I think that's important. A lot of it is being transparent with the decisions that we make. So whether it's, you know, hey, we're going to give our money, we're going to tie their money here. We're going to give an offering to this ministry so they see how we use our finances. Transparent with how we, you know, we do family devotions now, which is kind of a newer thing for us, which has really been good as far as getting all the, you know, both my kids involved with, you know, one of them reads a psalm, one of them reads from a different book we're reading. And so actively engaged in the process. You know, it's one thing to, you know, talk about Jesus and stuff like that, and that's fine. But to make it real for them, because what happens a lot to kids is that they get, you know, in college or they get into adulting, and all of a sudden, you know, it kind of gets real all of a sudden, and they have to put to practice all these things they were told or not told, and right. make it real for them. I mean, I remember just in college myself, you know, growing up as a pastor's kid. Just a religion 100 class was eye-opening for me. I'm like, wow, where did all this come from? All these different religions and, you know, it didn't get me to deny Jesus. It just was kind of saddening where I hadn't thought logically about a lot of those things. I wasn't able to give an answer for my faith in a way that could dispute those things. And so a lot of my college years, I was kind of going through the motions. And I think we have to kind of prevent that with our kids is why do we believe what we believe? Don't just do it because it's your dad's faith. Do it because you personally have a relationship with Jesus that will carry you through when you're on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. We've walked through that fairly recently with my son. He moved out and now he's actually engaged to be married. He's going to be married in September. Nice. And so he's, you know, adulting and doing all these things. So we literally just walked through and are walking through all these things. And, you know, Tim, what you said is really dead on, because, you know, when they step out, when my son stepped out from under the umbrella of this home, mm-hmm. to where, okay, he's paying his own bills. He's taking care of his truck. He's doing the things that he needs to do. He's caring for his own place. You know, my role changed. And also, and I know that his, you know, he can't live off my faith.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have struggles of his own and questions of his own, and he has to have a faith of his own to wrestle with those. And I'm thankful that he does, and that he's a studier of theology, and he has a deep walk with Jesus. I'm incredibly thankful for that. Everyone in my family does. Yeah. And so I don't say that as we have it all together, but I'm just thankful, because I didn't grow up in the church, and that wasn't my story at all. And the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is because I made a lot of bad decisions based off of bad beliefs and some bad things that happened to me. So I'm trying to create, you know, a new Jesus infused life for my family. Yeah. You know, and I'll let you know in, you know, 30 years how I do on that. But that's what we're trying to do, you know, my wife and I. So
yeah.
So you say something that is interesting in the book, and I initially pushed back against this. I know why you said it. I think I want you to speak into it. But you say in the book that feelings can't be trusted. Why is that?
Yeah, it's not one of the three sources of discernment. I mean, if you take your feelings, they change from day to day, don't they? I mean, they are constantly an indicator of how our emotions are feeling, how our flesh is feeling. And so if I trust my feelings, and I feel like, I mean, I feel right now, I feel like a lot of the culture is based around, you know, do what feels right. Mm-hmm. And we know that's not an accurate way to live your life. And so feelings are terrible indicators of the decisions we're supposed to make, because, you know, men that don't feel like they love their wives anymore are just going to leave because they don't feel that, you know, they don't feel like they did when they were dating, you know. And just one example there of just how we have to go back to our foundation in the Word of God and where He's calling us to go, because there are many days I didn't feel like writing a book. I don't feel like a lot of people that are in ministry don't feel like it, but they do it because they feel a higher calling to keep pursuing it.
Right.
I just think that there's so many areas in our life where our feelings are, I don't know how else to say it. They just are not, I mean, we should be responsive to our feelings. I'm not saying that, you know, trying to invalidate if you're feeling down, if you're feeling anxiety, if you're feeling all those things, like they should be addressed. Like we talked about earlier, talk it out, you know, process it. But at the end of the day, don't make any rash decisions based on how you feel in the moment, because most of the time you'll regret it.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. I think that there's, you know, there's something about emotions. Emotions are not, in my opinion, they're not altogether bad, or else God wouldn't have given them to us. But we can't live our life just based off of those emotions, because like you said, there's going to be highs and lows, and sometimes those emotions will betray you.
Right.
And they will actually take you away from who it is that you're supposed to be, to show up big in your own life, in your wife's life, in your kids' lives, in your community's life. And, you know, you won't be able to become what I say, a new kind of man, if you A, deny your feelings and your emotions, because again, God gave us those. And some of those, we need to validate some of those feelings.
Right.
And then there's other times where we have to understand, no, I'm not going to validate that feeling, because that's actually going to betray me, or it's going to betray the truth, or betray what God's saying to me, or what others are saying to me, is what you said, the main three sources of discernment.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question to ponder. And this question, it's one of those mind benders. And I don't know that there's a, I really don't know that there's a correct answer, which is good because, I mean, we could go all sorts of different directions with it. But what would Jesus do in a social media driven world? What would he do? I mean, in your opinion, Tim, what would he do?
Like, would he have a Facebook account or Instagram?
Would he? Would he be tweeting?
Yeah.
140 characters or less? I mean,
yeah. I think he could tweet more because he's Jesus. You know, he could break that
exactly.
mold. That's funny. I want to refer you to a book from Craig Groeschel. It's called Liking Jesus.
Okay.
It's probably the best book I've read on social media usage.
Cool.
There's a lot of stats in there that are just mind-boggling on how addicted people are to social media nowadays and how they find their identity in it.
Yeah. Wow.
And I have to fight that too. You know, I run a ministry where I do a lot of, I mean, I'm on almost every social media platform. And so I struggle with that too, where, okay, I'm trying to scroll through to find, you know, other ministries or to find cool things to post. And an hour goes by and you're like, wow, what did I just do with an hour of my time?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a whole chapter dedicated to social media because I think it's a very, I don't think you should completely ban social media from your life unless God's calling you to. I mean, there's people that give it up or,
sure, they take or fast it off their, for a time, period
fast
of time.
Time, or they take it off their phone and only do it on the computer, which I think is a good idea too.
Right.
Honestly, I was really at that point where before Discerning Dad, I was thinking about giving it up completely because you just read all these negative articles and bad comments and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where I just like, okay, I'm either going to give it up or I'm going to try to give a little back of positive encouragement out there.
Yeah.
So I think Jesus would, I don't know. I mean, it's a funny question, but I don't think he would be on it. I think he'd be too busy going out there, interacting with people and loving on sinners and just being with others. You know, you get Christians nowadays who debate theology never ending in the comment section, but won't go to someone in person and just love on them or ask, how can I serve you? Or how can I pray for you? And so we really have to be careful of what we're trying to accomplish when we are online. You know, and if you're on the receiving end of negativity, just don't engage with it. I mean, once you start engaging with it and stepping down to that level, you kind of lose a little bit of your identity. You kind of lose a little bit of what you're trying to do. And so, you know, thankfully I don't have to deal with that too much, but I know some people do. And some people also ask for it in the stuff they post, you know? I mean, I look at posts that I used to do like 10 years ago and they were very, very political in nature and all that kind of stuff. And I just look back and I'm like, oh, like what?
Yeah,
was
I was going to talk to you about that stuff too.
Yeah.
So, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So I think you have to look at also, you know, if I look at the posts 10 years from now, would I want my kids to see it? Would I want to see it? Would I want my pastor to see it? These are all things because once you put it out there, it's out there for good. I mean, there's no end of people that lose their job or lose their, even in a Christian circle, that lose their platform because of what they post.
Mm-hmm.
And so discernment goes very much with social media and keeping a kingdom mindset at all times. Even if you're not posting something for ministry, you're still a Christian and you still have a witness online. You know, and I post random memes. I post the random cat video. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having fun online either. I'm not saying that it all has to be about Jesus, but you don't want to tarnish your witness either by something that you engage in that's not loving.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. So as we're getting ready to wind down the show for tonight, I just want to ask you this question. It's kind of a deep question. What about manhood today concerns you?
I think there's definitely in the culture a loss of biblical manhood. When you take what the Bible calls us to be, you know, there's a crossing of roles. I think a lot of men might be just lost when they look at society and the definition of what a man should be. And if you try to get that from culture, I mean, you're going to be turned every which way, no matter what social group you look at or platform you look at. I mean, it's going to tell you one thing and then you know. So I think you have to go back to the roots of what God calls us to be as men, as leaders of our family, discipling our family and our children, loving our wife, you know, as Christ loved the church, you know, being the example to those around us too, in our jobs, in how we, in our work ethic, in our integrity. All those aspects just come down to just being a man of God. And yeah, I think it's not that simple, but it, you know, for my answer right now, it kind of is.
Okay. What would be three books that every man should read?
All right. Kingdom Man from Tony Evans.
Okay.
Great book. I just finished it recently. I'd say a good one for marriage is You and Me Forever by Francis Chan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good book on marriage. And then Man Up God's Way from Jody Burkeen. He runs a big men's ministry online. He also wrote the foreword to my book. It's a really good book just about kind of stepping up as a man and just kind of getting rid of excuses.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I hadn't heard of that one. I'd heard of the first two, though. Cool. Well, of course, your book is out, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, of course. And but is there any other new work or anything that you want to plug before we unplug for the evening?
Yeah, I do have a Bible plan on the YouVersion app. It is called Everyday Discernment. It's a 10-day kind of walk through discernment day by day. A lot of it's stuff that's based in the book. So if you kind of want to see a little bit of what the book is about, things that I haven't talked about on this podcast, you can check that out on your YouVersion app. Just go under plans, search plans, and type in Everyday Discernment, and you'll see it there. It's obviously free, and you can download that. So I should have some new Bible plans coming out this year. I do still do the weekly blogs, which you can get on discerning-dad.com. And so I hope those bless you.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks for that. And I will link all that so the guys can find it and find you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast tonight and kind of giving us, you know, a lot to chew on and just your take on discernment. And I think that it's consistent with what the Bible says. And I think that that men will be helped and dads will be helped if they will actually do some of these things that you said. So that's what the New Kind of Man podcast is about. It's about men not who just listen, but men who do the things that we talk about, and they take notes, and that they apply these truths so that they can be better men and better fathers, better husbands, better business leaders, better pastors, if that's what they do, whatever it is, so that we can ultimately change the world. So I want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Tim.
Thanks, Chad. It was great talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the New Kind of Man podcast. You've been given some good manly encouragement, and now it's your turn. If you found today's content helpful, go tell a friend and please leave us a review. Also, consider hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. Now it's time for all of us to do what Theodore Roosevelt said. Create. Act. Get action. Do things. Be sane. Don't fritter away your time. Take a place wherever you are and be somebody. Get action.